Keith Larson. Here to talk about our loudspeaker design tools that we come up with go beyond our Wolfram Test 2, but have heard of the small Wolfram Test 2 precision RLC meter with bots and other stuff. That will get you up through designing subwoofers, basic filters, that sort of thing. Also get the key characteristics of the mid-range meters. We need to get the full small conventional cables and a lot of stuff there. But of course, it does not have a microphone interface, so you just can't do any in-air acoustic testing, which is what we're going to proceed to today. But what I wanted to do in an hour is to take you from measuring the woofer, putting it in a box, defining from the electrical characteristics of what happens in the box, the enclosure effective volume, the enclosure tuning, port losses, box losses. All of this stuff is defined, it goes back into the simulator. The simulator is now aligned to what's happening electrically. By the way, most people, you know, make the assumption that your kill small box simulation is correct, you may find that it is not. And as I go through this, I'll explain a couple of things that go wrong. But there's interactions because it's there's also energy storage because of inductance is voice core. All these things conspire to give you something that you, you get that you didn't expect. After getting through the base enclosure design, I'm going to show you a little bit about what we can do with in-air testing. The tester is capable of sine wave, pulse, chirp, MLS, noise, a broad range of different types of test signals. Later on, you can touch upon why there's so many different types of test signals, because you can actually get a different result depending on the test signal that you use. This is also has a bearing upon when you do your TL small testing. Okay? There's ways to do TL small testing, and there's other ways to do TL small testing. We're about doing precision TL small testing, and we also have the ability of doing things like tracking TL small parameters with time level. Nobody else does this. So you can also do it with DC offset if you have a DC servo amplifier. So you know, these are the kinds of things that manufacturers were asking for. For the DIYer, you may want to just put a microphone on a speaker, do an RTA, get my response, edit the pulse control, put the waterfall, that sort of thing. But of course, we're putting more into it. In particular, I guess the bulk of the presentation is going to be what's called the interactive crossover design. What that is you design your crossover as an electrical netlist connection of resistors, inductors, and capacitors. And that is pulled into a nodal analysis type of algorithm. And the test signals that run out the left and right channel are modified. So one is going to be your tweeter, and the other is going to be your woofer. Because I wrote the entire routine, I was able to do things that allowed me to ratchet up the capabilities quite a bit. We can measure, for example, the electrical impedances of the woofer and the tweeter, and that therefore interacts with what's happening in this nodal analysis. I can also do things like put in a computer protection circuit. I don't think anybody wants to take a $100 scan speed tweeter and stick it on an amplifier and put the base signal through the computer. It'll take a couple of watts, but that's pretty long. Well, I can back out what happens. The massage, the test signal that's going out, as if that protection circuit wasn't there. So that's kind of the overview of what I'm going to talk about. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the PowerPoint presentation first. I'm going to switch over and try to just play with the actual docs. As I said, we have the ability to measure the keel small parameters of the driver. By the way, all of our boxes have that capability for low power keel small. This picture just happens to be using the WT2. So we have a WT2 that can use these other products. What you do is you connect up the driver to the tester. The first thing you do is you do a sweep. You find the QFS information. We also find frequency dependent inductance. This is a more complete keel small model than you might be familiar. That will be important because workers that have a high frequency have a whole lot of them. This presentation is not would that help to give a case? So I'm going to talk you through the steps of designing the speaker. I've seen everybody here's design speaker. I'm going to go real fast on this. Okay. First thing to do, make a track. You're going to stick it in a simulator. We've got a simulator. You haven't got a box in front of you. You have to decide, is the plausible outcome for the driver that you've got in front of you. But then, go to the shop and build your box. Now that you've built your box, you've got the driver, put the driver in the box. You're going to then need to find out how that driver is interacting in the box. Now, as you build these boxes, if it's a one-time build, you may want to consider things like, build the box slightly larger, so you can add something to the inside and make it smaller later. Okay. Once it's in the box, what a tool will do is there's two pumps there's a red one. The simulated one, the red one is the miniature. And what we've got is your box has there's an auto align. What the auto align will do is make those dimensions take some. And by modifying the box volume and the port tuning, it will align them with frequency. It's the interaction. It's a fairly complex thing. The next thing you've got to do is you've got to adjust the heights. And that's going to be your port and box launches. Once this is all done, you've got an effective box size and effective tuning that goes into the simulator. We can also turn this around. And in cases where, if you've got a very large box relative to VAS, the driver suspension stiffness, the VAS parameters, is actually calling the variable replacement of this upper VAS. So what you do is you enter box volume, it'll actually reflect VAS, the VAS for that particular box zone. When you do this, here's the CNC curves. Okay, this is the red, the yellow. That's how well these things line up when you do this. Now, if you are not... Yes. Okay, they're one up top now. Okay. Now, this, by the way, does change with drive level and a couple other things. It also is very important that you model the frequency dependent inductance. Not only do you have to model it, but you have to measure it properly. Most people, when they get so small parameters for a speaker, back it up. Okay. We'll assume that this is stuff off here. This is about this. It's out here. Will actually cause the frequency to shift a little bit. What it does, it shifts the kill small mechanical tank circuit. So what you really need to do is you need to pull on this is to back out the measure to make your kill small tank circuit. So having that type of precision is part of how we're able to do these things. It also allows us to do things like measure the kill small with dry fire. For you guys that later on get another slide. And that's important because did you know that, for example, the suspension can vary by 50% going from a rest condition to its loosest, drive? Like, usually, one through four holes. Maybe I get a good excursion going. But what that's doing is it's loosening. As you put in more and more drive, that's going to cause the box tuning to change. You're going to get something that may sound drier, it may sound boomier, but it's not the same sound that you thought you were going to get from the original simulation. So, kill small parameters versus drive level, got you covered. And if you have questions, be sure to stop. Okay. In our acoustic response type testing, we've got a broad range of testing types available. That will be important, for example, if you take an impulse and you put it into a woofer, and the woofer pushes forward on that impulse versus pulls back, the effect is different on the voice call. Suspension make that offset. The whole range of things that happen in a driver. So that's a good example of why a simple change of just flip the polarity on the speaker and you'll get different responses. Same thing with the clip. We put the box there, the glass, the length of the impulse, all of these are real time. The advantage of real time is that it goes click, 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 click. You see result, 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 result. We also have swept signs. Swept sign is better for higher signal to noise if you're going very low in frequency. It's really better for electrical type testing. From the real time response, we can also build up a few impulse response of the driver. This is important because from the impulse response, not only do you have the impulse response of the speaker, but you can also see the impulse response of the room. Like the floor, the ceiling, that sort of thing. Not too many people have an analog chamber at home. So, putting a window around the initial impulse and rejecting or essentially zeroing out the effect of reflections means that you're looking at the response of just the drive. There will be a couple of artifacts that show up because your window is very short, your base response will not go all the way in. So after playing with this for a while, you get to understand how that works and what's happening. Got the cumulative spectral decay, waterfall, RT60, various other capabilities, these other display formats. We can do microcircuit after the time of arrival, and that's essentially to fractions of the volume. Now, this means that it's kind of a how do I explain it? Yes, we measure very accurately, but it's effective acoustic distance. And that if you take your speaker or your microphone, you move it a little bit, more than likely you've got complex relationships between plains off nearby surfaces. So it's actually a continuum of measurement that's accurate, this type of accuracy, but it's it is affected by the environment. The better way to do some of this, what will be important to you guys, is what's the distance between, say, a mid-base and a clear for time alignment. If you look at the phase difference, you have that. Got some other tricks in there where you kind of take two microphones and align them in the line. Also, okay. The crossover designer, which is kind of the highlight of what I'm here to talk about today. Sorry about that. The idea is that you take an RLC crossover, you input the netlist into your computer, and we generate real-time signals out the left and right, simulating the crossover outputs. Typically, if you have done the homework and you've put in the gains of the tweeter and the woofer correctly, accounting for resistances from wires, that sort of thing, the fractions of the advantage, of course, now is that it's cheaper than going and buying a huge number of capacitors and inductors, spending time with your soldering iron, building your crossover, taking apart your speaker, putting in the crossover, now you just look at the wires and test. You should be able to build your crossover directly off it. As I said before, we also have a simple computer protector. There's also the capability of time shifting the driver. Remember, these are real-time test signals, and I can put a delay on one channel versus the other, shifting that. So if you have a test box like this, you can think, well, gee, I want to we also have another capability in the simulator where you can define crossovers as simply amplitude, phase, and particular frequency, and for both the left and the right. One of the neat tricks is you can go ding, 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 here's your crossover, it's a brick wall. So if the woofer fell off like this, and definitely does this. Now if I have an abrupt stop of the woofer and an abrupt start of the tweeter, what can I do? If I look at the phase at that point, it tells me the delta time between the woofer and the tweeter at that frequency. So that can help you in deciding the topology of your crossover. I don't know how yet to write a crossover design wizard that didn't come up and look at the measurements that we made with the tweeter and the woofer and say, well, you know, it needs to be second, fourth on this, fourth order on that. That's still very much a human interaction. But you have the ability to measure. What I suggest for people that use our tool is we don't have a schematic entry built into it yet, but you can go out and you can get the ORCID LT Spice. LT Spice happens to be free from Linear Tech. And you do your crossover this way, generate a netlist, pull it in, do your simulation. Or, if you started in the old days, netlist format is not terribly difficult. You can just enter your numbers right there and tweak them. It's simply the way you go. Other thing you do is you enter the resistance of the mirror protector. there, and that's this is the paddock of the creator protector. As you can see, it's a fuse, a couple of resistors, and it's that. All it's really there for is to just clamp the voltage that the computer can't see. If you've got your wire there, you can obviously you can modify the test signal that's going out. That's what software does. So this is an effective way of protecting your computer. Talked about results and set off right here. You see that there's a red and orange here. This is on the per division scale. There is also, down here, phase lines up. That's related to patch. Plug onto this box here. So, it gives you an idea of what to do with the crossovers. Questions? Before we get into this, I can throw up some more slides and then I'm going to get into the next piece. Questions? but I'm going to throw up a couple more slides, thanks. This is a measurement of, in this case, compliance. So the BAS change with driver. Remember I told you about how the compliance changes with driver level? You take, it was a tank bag, WF6WF7S. Orange mid-base unit, resonance of 85 hertz at low drive level, it dropped to 55 at higher drive levels. That's typical of drivers. So if you're out measuring the field small on a driver, where are you on that curve? It makes a big difference on your field small measurements. If you think about, you know, if your FS dropped to, you know, 60, dropped by 40%, your CMS actually changed more. So this is for driving operation. So this is, you know, part of the reason why, you know, person A versus person B, you know, does not get the same field small numbers on the same bracket thing. There's also a question of, are they using a constant current source across the entire frequency spectrum? It's also, are you spending enough time with the resonance to actually excite the resonance? If you do a pulse or something like that, yeah, you'll get an impedance curve. It'll look kind of close, but it's not the same. You can change your test signal, get different results. You can change your drive level, get different results. If you're doing a broadband real-time signal, you're not passing current at all frequencies. It's actually dependent on the frequency. There's, you know, a bunch of stuff like that. So, we look at it a little differently. If you can track resonance very accurately, if you want to track that it feels small, very accurate. Then we can begin to pull out versus current level, or CMS versus drive level, that sort of thing. Is that interesting? Let's see if you can find if you take the bar, we have another routine where we have one piece of the offset, and if you push from one side to the other, you can actually see the variation of BL CMS, that's what it's called. It's the setup on the driver, and if it's manufactured, or if I get the coil in there correctly, is the suspension setup right? Now, that, by the way, is not always a bad thing. some drivers think that this is intentional in a power audio situation. Because if you put a huge amount of power into a, like a power audio speaker, the bottom thick of it is where it goes for. So they will intentionally do some of these things. That's a little different than a Wi-Fi dispersion analysis. As I said, you can also measure cables, resistors, capacitors, that sort of thing. This, for example, is a it's a test system. The red one is where they're twisted together tight. This is where they're hooked up wide. Now here, they have to go up to almost, let's say, an that's a big change. So if you were to take a big stout heavy wire around both sides of the cabinet to your tweeter, and it happens to be like this tweeter, or the low impedance, give it to the tweeter, your tweeter. This is measurable. We also have enough accuracy here that this is buffers. Of our calibration resistors, that's one million per division. So, being able to measure with this type of accuracy brings new capabilities to the audio as a whole. We can also measure capacitors in our one for particular inductors. As far as the product line is concerned, Wolf & Tester 2, that's our baseline product. That's pretty much strictly low power RLC type testing. It will do both precision sine wave and real time stamp type tests. But we do everything using a sine wave, because that gives us the best results. The other thing that comes in there is the simulator. You saw the simulator. There is some other capabilities, so there's a lot. The next step up is our speaker tester. The speaker tester is that we've got this embedded in there, right on. Additional microphones. And the microphones, of course, are going to allow you to do in-air acoustic testing, crossover design. Up to the Wolfer Tester Pro, that's where we enable the high power port in that. With the high power port, now you can actually measure your fuel small information, compression, and that sort of stuff at power. So we have a progression for our product line. And there's actually, if you get onto our web page, we actually have upgrade plans. So I think we've got most of the things people are looking for within these products. That actually is the PowerPoint presentation part of this. So now I'm going to get into actually measuring the driver, putting it back in the box, measuring it in the box, showing that what we have in the box is going to come up the same. Any questions on what the testers can do? There are variants. That doesn't work out. Yeah. The speaker test functions look like the phone. It's a microphone. It's only a second microphone. The Pro was shipped with two microphones. It comes with a microphone and a microphone. will at some point probably get to also offering these microphones as calibrated microphones. There are some furnitures I will warn you that I've seen that others have been really flat. So there's some variation in furnitures. But crossover design, stuff like that, it's all well below that. You're looking for kind of, the transition. So we like, for the money, it's a great market. It's just that we got to get set up to do calibration on the microphones. We do have the ability in the software to import calibration events. So, if you have the calibration curve on the microphone, it's looking better. If you've got a known reference, you can do that. Generally, though, known references are $2,000 BK microphone. Okay. Any more questions on the tester? Okay, just hop right into it. Different than that. I'm gonna hook it up there. Yeah. Is it finding the inductance? Oh, and it's expensive right now. But the whole one will do this. I'll let you know when you switch over to the bigger system. So at this point, when the resin does this by finding the zero phase crossing after subtracting off the inductance, it's at the lower, plus one, and higher. What's interesting is this is where the phase maximizes. Here we go, it's just going to fill out the rest of the curve. You can go back and add additional points if you want. You can also set it up to sweep the slower chop rate, but it's got all the data and things we can put into QFS. It saves everything. The result of that first test is it came up and said that the resonance of that driver was 39 hertz, 16 mags, etc. The next step of the test, that. mass test, add in, that you can either add it in as grams directly, or it'll multiply by 0.5. So, let's assume you're Canadian. You said Canadian? Okay. You'd enter the weight of your Canadian vehicle for a minute, that's what you add. Okay. Just don't use something that's steel, okay? That'll get attracted to the thing. Generally, you know that a nickel, for example, is 5 grams, you might enter the mass bag. This driver happens to be 5.2 inches of the diameter. And what it does is it climbs the modified resonance. No. Well, it is if you could end up doing like a healthy professional musical instrument speaker where you get enough acceleration onto the voice coil that, okay, it's accelerating up, no problem, and then it accelerates down. It accelerates down fast enough to where gravity is not keeping the nickel on terra firma, the nickel's going to start to vibrate and bounce. Another thing would be, I get to measuring like an 18-inch driver that has a voice coil that doesn't count. Okay. In that case, you have a gazillion nickels required. Okay. I've taken like a taping little bit together to study some time. So you learn some things. Okay. So we dropped the resonance for free. We've now got a full, feel small model for that driver. We've added more to it. You're absolutely correct. How about number 7? We can go up here. This is the original. If you notice that there's no indication of what VL was, a couple other things like VAS, the suspension. That's the refinement. That's how the. There's a lot of people that had consternation over some of the things I was suggesting. But what I can tell you is that you don't have to use the suggested things. That you can actually be plus or minus. If you take nickels and you add them to the phone, from the presses, you're going to get a shift in the CMS of the suspension. You'd actually prefer to use as light a mass as possible. However, the conventional wisdom of the days 30 years ago was that you had to add enough mass to get the resonance to shift far enough to where your math didn't have as much error. Remember, in the bad old days, you had an amplifier, a resistor, a voltmeter, and shake your head. Okay, you've probably seen it. You've got a sensitivity there. That every little error in your measurement, because it's a hand tweaked signal generator, you might not even have a frequency counter. So, where I'm plus or minus 5% of my frequencies, I need a shift bigger than 5% to get a decent measurement on this modified thing. Well, this test is accurate to 100 kilohertz. So, you don't have to add that much mass. It's actually kind of fun to go in here and you run this test with different test masses. But you can actually see that the CMS changes. Test mass increases. Okay, so we take this model, we put it in the simulator, and we're going to pull that up. This is the simulator interface. we copy in our and I'll mess it up. That's the now one of the things with teal small simulations is that in the bad old days you didn't initially have any modeling of the inductees. Right. Take a look at what happens as they change the model. From a simple non-inductor to a simple inductor to a frequency. And the shape of the curve change. Pretty big. If you're dealing with a driver that has a very large X-max, a large inductor, it also uses a very large bulk down. A lot bigger than you expect. You cannot use the teal small alignment tables are. It's thrown off that point. So it's important to have a simulator that understands this. All right, so I pulled that information in here and I said, okay, this is the reason that I'm picking this is that it's pretty close to what that's going to come. So, you know, I've decided on the box, my network, go to the shop, put in the box, did I get what I thought I was going to get? And seals, we're going to invent it. So, I'm trying to get some resistance in here. This is because we spit out the HVA called the tables. Just in case we go back to the tables. Again, we're going to go and find essentially zero phase process. This is the first beat. That's from the fork. sit in front of me. Watch the frequency step. Getting smaller and smaller. And by the way, you dial in how much precision you want. I got it set for, trying to reach out pretty fast. Here's our information for the ceiling, our limit box. So you get your FSB, HA, alpha, that kind of information. I want this to line up nicely. I'm going to go in and fill in a couple of points. Use the mouse to set the frequency at the normally I've got a much higher resolution on the screen, so I've used it running this tool with quite a bit more in front of me. Okay. Now, earlier, when I was playing around with the simulator, this would have been the all would be the simulator, simulated expected heats for this bifurcated box. It's close, but it's not quite right. I guess if it gets the amplitude correct, at least it was, there's no loss, either in the box or the port. Well, here's the magic button. Down here is this auto align. To do this, it says, what do we want to do? Well, we want to find the effective box size and temperature. Once for a second, it comes up and says, I think that's 0.343 cubic feet. Did anybody see me really entering box volume or anything before? And it came back and said, FB, CMM, committed to compliance, quite a bit of information. Copy these, yep, that looked better. So just like that, we've aligned the simulator. Now the question is, will our simulated response, this, which by the way, doesn't look real good, but it happens to be what a lot of people buy these days. That's what the psychological policy does. And earlier I was saying that the drivers that have a large inductance in them, they produce a pretty good bump. Just for a bump capacity, right about right there. So people go out, they've got good teal small numbers, they put it in the simulator, they build the box. Wow, listen to that base, it's strong. But it's kind of good. They wonder what happened down here. It sounds a little weak down there. But it turns out that a great big huge inductor has done this. It's created a big bump. It's also kind of roll off. So, and it is, it's interesting to see where you can take the simulation if you have enough information in front of you. Alright. At this point, I'm going to switch gears slightly. And we're going to stick the microphone in front of this. Now, what's interesting is the port has to be on the back, the driver's on the front. What it can do is we're going to look at the driver response and the driver phase of Yeah, we do. So it's not a prop, but if I'm dragging my feet, it's not a little faster. If you want me to go slower, I'll go slower. The control window has to be open and actually get, corner, X. Pulse, I'm going to put in a chirps and stuff are kind of. Here we've got overlay of the actual and simulated response and phase of that tractor. I just measured with my got our base user kind of design. If I wanted to look at the speaker proper total, the fill in. If I take my microphone and stick it to the back, that would be where the response is important. So that gets us up to the point where we have finish our base design. It's the next step. The next step is to bring this across over. Okay. Let's do this here. Well, I would go with probably massive, half as much as what is perfect. We actually, the recommend that we put up here is for the loudspeaker design footprint, because everybody, it wants to see them. The mass that is suggested is to produce 25 or 50% change in resonance. So if the driver's sitting there, if you add the weight, the resonance shifts down by 10%. You don't have enough shift in resonance to really good measurement. Add more mass. Get the 25 or whatever it is. Finally, I'm convinced that I've got enough mass on here to shift the resonance that I've got good readings. It will, of course, now depend upon the driver. It's really related not to the frame size of the driver, but more to the actual moving mass. However, at the get-go, come up with some suggestions of an 8-inch, a 10-inch, a 12-inch, roughly, start here, okay? The problem is that you can go to a full-range driver with a real short, lightweight voice coil, or a high efficiency type thing, it's going to be very lightweight, very low mass. You go to a car audio front where it's a 1 pound slug of copper with heavy polypropylene cone and heavy rubber surround, you're going to need a lot of mass. So it's going to change the direction of the driver. But what you are looking for is you're looking for a substantial drop in resonance. If you're putting it in a test box, which is the better way of finding VAS, then of course you want it to be a rise in frequency. Now it's a little trickier because you kind of have to think ahead, just how big of a test box do I need in my test? I don't know the moving mass and the suspension stiffness to begin with, but how do I know the size of my test box? It also happens to be that, part of this auto alarm thing here, remember it came back and it said, I'm going to find the effective box size, the effective thing. If you flip that around, there's another option where you input the box volume, the effective box, and it will tell you VAS. It will actually be able to correct. You're starting with good, motor characteristics from your earlier Delta instance. You can end up with a quite clean kill zone on there. There's different ways to approach it. I'll explain that greater detail. It's a rather interesting topic because if somebody's open baffle, if you have a baffle type of setup, for example, what is the resonance of the driver? I've got nothing behind the driver. There's no air screen. So it's totally the moving mass of the driver and the suspension characteristics of the driver. Now if I go to a small vented box system, like you have in some cars, okay, I have a cubic foot for a 12-inch driver, air spring behind the driver is significant. It's as a ratio, it's higher. You go to an acoustic suspension like the old AR system, okay, they got a very loose suspension, small box. Almost all the suspension characteristics are coming from the box. By the way, in that case, it's a variation in the suspension. It's less of an effect because you're relying on air entirely for the spring. You're not relying on the spring. You're not relying on the suspension or the outer surround. So, like I said, it depends on how people are set up drivers and what are used for their driver. Sometimes that lead to the measurements. If they do.
Not anymore.
Stick with the curb. Oh, that's fine. It's like, I should see more going on at the high frequencies. I'm not going out to 2K. Alright. Okay, this is a 5 dB per division. I'm just putting out the signals to the two speaker. Now what I've done is I pulled up one of the crossover design files that happens to match the crossover of this particular box, and it's essentially what it is. It's a resistor, and this node will value this much. How many of you have done circuit design like this before? You ever done that? Okay. Wow. If you brought this kind of figure, either on a piece of paper or the way this works is, ground is typically called node 0, and then you go around and you just say 1, 2, 3, 4, and you're going to say that this component, node 1, is going to be fixed, and this node will happen. That's what a node list is. It's just a connection. What we do is you put a 0 here, and you know, number them, and then generate this file. Okay. Now this is the CAD program. It likes to label things and something. This is 6, 4, 1, 3. But those could be numbers as well. There's different ways of programming it, but it's just simply the component is connected between this one and that one. And on this schematic and put in those numbers eventually it would match up. So you see this, copy it, paste it back over into the other. Once that's in this tool, you would, okay, here it is, just putting raw signals out to the tweeter and the woofer. And then say simulate. You hear it change? Okay, it's now got different test signals going out to the woofer and the tweeter. Drew. Especially the revolver. It's interesting, we're getting that's probably another table or something like that. It's going to be the width crossbar. Now you can see the face of her face lighting up. It's the side of it. I moved something a little bit. So we got a little bit of a phase difference out there to the high frequencies. It's just the sighting. That's a fraction of a sampling period. I think it's very, very small. You can fix that if necessary. What I'm going to do is on this sucker. A little bit of difference in the amplitude of the decibels go out because you get it. But I went through and essentially designed for a full crossover, which is this, and matched it to that kind of accuracy. So if I wanted to change my crossover, here, I change that value, I'd say signal. I can also, in here, add in offsets in terms of meters and milliseconds or kind of seconds, like the speed sound. If you put in here how far you want to time shift the tweeter for time, so you can actually create a staggering one to go. And that will affect the crossbar. You might find that it works better with a time shift, a physical shift of the tweeter relative to the voice coil alignment. When you do voice coil alignment, for example, the typical thinking was that the voice coil of the woofer needs to match up with the voice coil of the tweeter. But did you know that that only worked with a particular type of second order to third order crossover? You couldn't use a different type of crossover setup. And on top of that, the reasons of the woofer and the tweeter were not going crazy at that crossover. So, coming up with a crossover that works, that's clean, that is well behaved. There's no substitute for salt. But at least, you know, we've got tools now that, you know, give you a fair chance of cleaning this up. So very quickly, you could look at this and say, well, okay, what's going on with the face? Now, this is not what I would consider a high risk. This was a dead software for my computer. And as a retriever, I was trying to get into a throat-based demo to take out the shift. But, you know, look at the response. I kept that together for the first 30 minutes or so. You know, what components have I got on my desk? I did tweak the inductors a little bit, but that's what I was able to achieve. So, when I sit down and design real speakers, real crossovers, you just dial it in. It's okay. Any thoughts about this? Yeah. There's more things in there. The speaker tester is $650. It's for what's in there, it's marked. The Pro is a $995 type device. It's under $1,000. But the idea is that, you know, we are intending that to go out to, you know, manufacturers and people that are going to go, you know, a little bit further in terms of what they can do electrical testing wise. There will probably be some features that will be reserved in Pro, and we may actually come up with some modules as, you know, additional pay type modules. But as you see here, there is quite a bit. Well, if we ever did come up with a box, we probably still have some reasonable. And if you wanted to upgrade the box, we'll keep our customers happy. So, the software updates recently have been fast and furious. There's been, you know, a lot of stuff going in. I haven't told you that half of this box can fit in this one. So, there's things like R260, it's a slightly 40 maximum type of thing. Going over to the flat pants and you see the echoes. Well, that's my favorite. Another thing that I alluded to very briefly, some of you saw me showing this to Wayne when he came in. It was this, what we call an arbitrary crossover. Would you like to see that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, we actually put your face on the clock. It's not on the face. Yeah. And another interesting thing, now on the topic of face. Actually, because we're in the simulator, let me turn off the simulator. Okay, it's wrapped around. But it'll measure distance. Okay? Here it's fucking. Distance is at. That is the 5 alpha. So we can do that. The phase angle you see up here is very important. That's where I was going to the next thing, which is this XVR format. An XVR file, what would you like to see an arbitrary crossover at 4 kilohertz? That's worked pretty good.
Thank you. That's really high output. Yes.
Notice there's a brick wall all between. Just like a brick wall like that. Yeah, I've got good things here. What is the phase at that sharp cutoff? Oh, by the way, balance control. Excuse me, this receiver. You can see the sharp transition. Phase is just speed of sound and frequency. More classic, however, because it's fine. It's not here, it's not here. So, actually, what I would just like to do is possibly here, you'd have to turn that back into meters. But that's what that phase difference at that frequency is. That's the effective distance. So, one of the things that makes an obviously impossible is like crossover design wizard. And what that wizard could do is they could say, hey, you know, if I stick a phase in the woofer, am I better off picking a first or a second or a third order filter and figuring some stuff out for what the gentleman ahead of me was saying. You know, there's no substitution. Sometimes in these things, they just don't come together in the universe. So, but I've got this much information more than anybody ever had. Questions? Of course, at the end, they're all not quite around. Okay.
I have not played this. That's, I'm not sure when I move it. Like some meters? 10 millimeters? Stop and start. See if I can get this. There we go.
You got it.
Yeah, I kept the stop.
You could actually have it on the throttle. But you saw it change. So I figured you'd have to calculate and figure, how much is that phase change that would correspond to that landing frequency.
Yeah, there's no reason. Because what you would do in the
process file, you just have to amplify this correctly.
So, that's not a problem. But it's. You can see. This schematic, as it is, if you want, but you could bring it over with it. It's a phone.
This is something
you might make it, what is the inductance of your lead wires, your speaker cables?
Make this one not 6.5 microfarad, but 100 picofarad.
Okay, very effectively out of the circuit then. Or, Now, some people don't delete stuff like that with readers. They keep values for that like that. And that way,
this is a doctor capacitor.
You're actually going to cascade to get first, second, third order type stuff. It's all the same components. It's usually in the same topology. It's just different values.
Oh, by the way, that price is both Parker and the soft.
So, that's awesome. One price. Other things that
I really wish I had a much higher resolution. I'm a standard FFT type of displays, distortion measurements. Oh, here's one. Here's the impulse response that system. I think I left the infinite crossover thing on. And the infinite crossover is a calculated crossover that uses some other stuff. It's also a reconstructed impulse. You don't ever get the impulse going to the speaker, so you can't. But, okay, travel on. Ah, okay. It's actually a good catch. One of the things that I can do, because I can align things in time as well as I do, is I can take one microphone and another microphone, and let's say they're slightly different distances from the driver. I can align them in time to get the time average of the two microphones. So you kind of get the effect of, I guess you can call it a directional microphone, and or you could say, okay, the impulse belongs to the driver, they coincide, they add. The pulses that are coming from the floor and wall reflections, that sort of stuff, we're going to average down. So you get less in the frequency of the from those. So you may have seen the this is actually, notice how this is actually smoothed out now. This is the reconstructed impulse, and depending on notice as I make this wider, I get more low frequency resolution. The reason is that I'm adding more time. As this narrows down, you don't have data to really define what's happening at low frequencies. However, the ripple is also mitigated as I have to get very close to the speaker, so I'm not getting a whole lot of ring reflections in this. But I think that's the biggest. Here. Room and reflections. So what I would do is I'd say I don't want those. Now that's called. But if you zoom in on the pulse itself. What you actually start to see sometimes is it could cap diffraction, or no, diffraction. effects off of the other side of the tire. It can also result in frequency. That's what the enforcement is. It's just something that turns off. So if there's a fault-created response to that system, put that back on, shock. It's time to put it down. Okay, if this actually putting in a pulse, we're reconstructing, it's actually a turn. Here it is. That's the step response of the driver. And you can see actually here, here's your low frequency stuff that's going to happen a good long way out. So quite naturally, if I'm chopping it off, I'm not going to get any of that low frequency. Start getting out here, you can see the low frequency start to fill in. But you don't see that normally when you're just looking at the impulse. Put it in the show me the step response mode, it's a little bit more. You can also put it on a logarithmic scale. You can now see the decay of the room. See this falling off, it is your earlier reflections. Then we've got something strong happening here, another one there. Here's something else. And if I was to look at these, that's 9 milliseconds. That's 9 feet. So that's going to be go out, hit that wall, come back. That's what some of those are. Now they're not, you kind of go back here. Get this. See these right there? There they are. Actually, not quite as much as 3.2 meters. If you go outside, you don't get any of this stuff. If you get better results outside because you can kind of fly open, you don't have to drop down there. So that would help. If you're in a gymnasium, a gymnasium is acting all like crazy, try hanging the thing a couple feet up here. Another thing that I have quite resorted to is
I actually have that one.
This is No, the this is the small. This is this. This one is really the tall tower called Pavada Belmont. Plus about the supporter and all that stuff. Just like this one, that point.
Yes. Hey, your car's not ready.